Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning and welcome into another edition of Boston Community Affairs and WEEI. My name is Alex Reamer. We have an eclectic show for you folks today. Our first guest is Sylvan Bruni. He is the president of Boston Pride. He was actually on the first ever episode of Boston Community Affairs back in June. Sylvan is here to talk about the Trump administration's recent plans to change the legal definition of gender under Title IX to make it unchangeable and biological, so to effectively legally wipe transgender people out of existence. So Sylvan will talk about the effects of that, how much more importance that places on the ballot question 3 here in Massachusetts in 2 weeks, and also as we wrap up National Bullying Prevention Month, to talk about how at-risk transgender people are to bullying and harassment in comparison to cisgender people, and how these kinds of tactics by the presidential administration put the transgender community more at harm. And then following that, we change gears to Dr. Shab Kreesh, who is a director of TMG and Sleep Therapy Center in North Texas. She's also the author of the book Restore Your Rest, Solutions for TMG and Sleep Disorders. As somebody who seldom gets enough sleep every night, as I'm sure most of you don't either, I was very interested in this conversation to talk about how we can get better sleep and just how important that is. We'll be right back with both those interviews on WEEI. And welcome back to Boston Community Affairs and WEEI. On the phone lines right now, we have Sylvan Bruni, who is the president of Boston Pride. Sylvan, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, good to talk to you again. It's been a few months. I want to start with one of the bigger news stories of the week. The Trump administration is reportedly looking to change the legal definition of gender under Title IX to make it unchangeable and biological. So basically, if you're born with, let's say, male genitalia, if this comes into law, you will forever be considered male. What I think is especially grotesque about this is any dispute about one's sex would have to be clarified using genetic testing. My first question is, what are some potential implications of this if this does become the new legal definition of gender under Title IX?
Well, basically, this is a way to rewrite how discriminations are considered in the judicial system. So basically, if such a change in the way things are specifically defined, if that happens, it basically removes the ability to consider discrimination against transgender people actually discrimination, because there is no more legal basis anymore to basically explain that there is a discrimination. So it's a complete reversal on all of the progress that has been made over the years and over the decades in the LGBTQ movement to educate the general population, to educate our leaders, lawmakers, about the experiences of transgender people, what it means to be transgender, and by basically erasing their existence in the legal definitions, you also erase the ability to actually target discrimination and make things better and make their lives safer and more fulfilled in our communities. So it has a tremendous impact in their daily lives and in the lives of their families and people around them as well. So our entire actually community would be affected by this.
Yeah, because basically it's saying that it no longer exists, right? They're basically being legally nullified.
Absolutely. You basically lose your right to say that you have been discriminated because there is no basis for it. And it basically erases your own identity. So it's like the government telling you who you are and who you should be based on specific arbitrary criteria that have been considered now for a while to be obsolete, to be that the experience of LGBT people, and in particular for transgender people, is what defines what their identity is.
Right, because let's say, you know, and we have a ballot question coming up in 2 weeks, question 3 about bathroom laws. This would say at a federal level, if you, let's say, were born with, let's say, male genitalia and you transition to female and you identify as female, you know, you if like how that if you wanted to use the bathroom, let's say, in a federal locale, you know, in a state that doesn't have its own laws, how would that work? You could, what, be prosecutor? What? Like, how does, I guess, what's a real-time example for how this would work? Because I think that really articulates it best for people.
Right. And caveating that I am not a legal expert and I'm not a lawyer.
Right.
Basically, the idea is that currently transgender people are protected under the laws of the Commonwealth in these kinds of situations. If the federal definition changes, it may have impact on their ability to be protected. Now, that is why it is so important that everyone votes yes on 3 in the upcoming ballot here in Massachusetts, because we want to make sure that those laws stay in the book. We want to make sure that the population of Massachusetts clearly says, we are here to protect trans people. We accept you. We want you to flourish in our community. We want you to bring your whole self to the community, and we will continue to protect you. And in effect, providing a rebuke to those ideas of changing definitions of gender in the law. So this would be the Massachusetts response of being a welcoming Commonwealth and an accepting, and a Commonwealth that actually cherishes the identities of everybody within Massachusetts.
Yes, with this potential new legal definition, it makes question 3 all the more important. And I don't know, from your perspective, Sylvan, what where are we at in terms of the Trump administration's attacks on LGBT people? Because, you know, it's funny, during the campaign, Trump, by shallow media types, and I'll include the mainstream media too, kind of portrayed him as a pro-LGBT Republican because he didn't exactly make gay rights a central issue of his campaign. He, oh my goodness, held the rainbow flag upside down once. How exciting. But, you know, from the moment he named Mike Pence's VP, Jeff Sessions' attorney general, it certainly didn't seem like we were going in a pro-LGBT direction. And now we had the transgender troop ban. We have this proposal. You know, we've had lots of conservative justices, of course. So just in general, how can we describe what the Trump administration's effects has been already on the LGBT community?
Well, I would say there are two major impacts. First, all of that campaign rhetoric about being on the side of LGBTQ
right.
people and defending our community was just campaign tactics, and it was just empty and shallow words by a candidate who would just say anything to get votes. And now the actions are revealing of that second impact, that it's actually creating a hostile climate for LGBTQ people. And in particular, for transgender members of our community, it really is a nefarious climate of aggression and constant oppression, continued public and oppression of transgender population. You look at what is happening within the Department of Defense and the reversal on the acceptance of transgender people as member of our troops. You know, it's staggering to see how things have just flipped without even an understanding of the impact of it, of the history behind the progress that has been made. And, you know, the community, the LGBT community, is very actively fighting this renewed ban on transgender members of the military forces. There are lawsuits that are ongoing, and so far the Trump administration is not in a good position, but we need to keep fighting that in the courts to make sure that protections remain in effect and that transgender service members are respected, valued, and welcome into our forces.
Right, and that's amazing. Like, when that was proposed last summer, it was one of the biggest stories in the country for a number of days, and then it fizzles out. The Department of Defense said they were going to do a study, and then earlier this year they enacted it with seemingly little fanfare. So I think that's a good lesson, Sylvan, to say that this, for example, this proposal, this memo that was leaked that said we're considering changing the definition of gender to biological unchangeable under Title IX, it's getting a lot of fervor now, but it's a reminder that if and when this does become law, it could kind of go below the radar, as I think we saw the
Absolutely.
Enactment of the transgender troop ban. So just a message to always be active and always be vigilant.
It's exactly that, you know, and that's the tactic of making those bombastic statements at one time and then just trying to slip the actual enacting of the laws or policies, you know, to fly under the radar. And, you know, people have typically a short attention span, and because we are getting overwhelmed with those bombastic statements, that we don't really know what to follow and what's real and what's not real, what's true and what's not true. And that's why our community and everyone who is a supporter of the LGBTQ community should really pay attention and continue to get informed and to learn and to get educated about what is happening and maintaining that awareness about those issues. You know, there's just too much going on that, you know, obviously we could lose track of things, and that's why there are so many organizations dedicated to enforcing the law that currently exists and making sure that we protect those laws.
Right, and you mentioned a few minutes ago, Sylvan, about how this further, the total climate further exposes transgender people to harassment. Right. October, of course, is National Bullying Prevention Month. We've done a couple shows centered around various themes with that. My question for you is, how much more at risk is a transgender community to bullying and harassment in comparison to the rest of us, for lack of a better term, the cisgender folks?
Right. It's very significantly higher. And you know, there are so many, in so many different domains. You know, one of the key points that I want to insist on,
sure,
is the intersectionality of the identities of transgender members of our community. Because oftentimes, you know, there is this accumulation of identities, of vulnerable identities, that make things even worse when you have political leaders that actually start attacking minorities. And unfortunately, the effect of those attacks, the effect of that nefarious climate that you just mentioned, are even worse on the trans population. You know, talking about even, you know, we were doing a lot of work with youth. When you look at trans youth in our country, how can you even think that there is hope when you hear their leader, the leader of the country, and people around him make those statements and basically continuously devaluate their identities and their lives? And that's why, you know, we are spreading the message, and we're trying to work as hard as we can, and not just Boston Pride. You know, there are many, many, many organizations in our community, including Freedom Massachusetts, really actively working on the Yes on Three campaign, to make sure that people, that our friends, that our colleagues, that our families, do really understand what those experiences are like, and daily suffering and hostile attitudes towards transgender people is just plain unacceptable, and that there is a way to combat that. Whether it is by demonstrating in the streets, but also by actually voting on November 6th.
Right. You cannot stress that enough, how important it is to vote. You touched on this, Sylvan. I do want to go back to it, about the LGBT community as a whole and what we can do for transgender people. How do you think we stack up in terms of our fight for transgender people? Because, you know, because I am openly gay, and it is... It is interesting to think, you know, we are such a large umbrella, LGBTQIA. It's such a huge umbrella. In general, how do you think the LGBT community does it, and what can we do better in terms of continuing to support transgender people as part of our community in these times?
Right. There is always room for improvement. You know, it is true that for many, many years, you know, trans issues were not necessarily at the forefront,
right,
of the fight of our community, both politically, but also in terms of you know, intervention in the media and the common discussion, the public discourse on LGBT issues. But this has very significantly changed. I think there has been a lot of realization, you know, after the fight for marriage equality, that this was really the next big ticket item that our community needs to push very, very hard on. And what each and every one of us can do is be very visible in our support, continuing to talk about the issue, because, you know, oftentimes we don't feel that we necessarily know enough about it. Well, that should be the prompt to go and educate ourselves and talk to transgender people, go and volunteer with trans organizations, ask them how we can support them and be there, and publicly state our support, so that we engage the conversation with other voters, that we engage the conversation with other members of our community and beyond our community, so they do understand the impact of the vote. You know, and the big thing with respect to the vote on question three in Massachusetts is that a lot of people, even in the LGBTQ community, are not even aware of this ballot question. So there is this really enormous effort being undertaken in the community to let people know and to explain what it is. Plus, the wording of the question is a little weird. So making sure that people understand that a yes vote is to keep things as they are, to keep the protection for trans people. So there is this very large, intense effort on educating and explaining and understanding what trans experiences are, so that we realize the impact of the vote.
Right, a lot of the arguments against question three and these protections are similar to the arguments made against the gay community years or decades ago, where I was watching one of the debates between Senator Warren and her challenger, Jeff Diehl, and you know, one of Diehl's arguments for opposing question three is, oh, well, I, of course, want everybody to be safe, but in this law would potentially create a loophole where sexual predators could enter bathrooms. And it's like, what are you talking about? But then you go to, well, that's the argument that was made against gay people decades ago. Oh, they're sexual predators. They're going to, spread their message, if you will. They're going to corrupt our children. So it seems like that a lot of the arguments made against the gay community decades ago are now being made against the trans community as well. So I think that's a commonality, too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The ugly head that's coming back on those kinds of accusations, and you probably have seen the commercials, really disgusting commercials, painting trans people as a major threat to children. This is absolutely unacceptable, and just as it was unacceptable when this was the argument made against lesbian and gay people before, and specifically on the issue of safety in bathrooms. And I just want to also remind that public accommodations is a lot more than just bathrooms. You know, it's access in restaurants, it's public buildings, and a number of things. The law already does protect, you know, non-trans people in the bathrooms. There is always specific language, including in that, the public accommodations bill, law, that there is special language dedicated to that. So the protections do exist. It is basically a non-issue, but the opposition is trying to make that an issue, and we have to continuously, you know, remind people and educate people that it actually is not an issue. And in the last 2 years that the law has been on the books, there has been zero case where this happened. Okay, so it's very, very important to try to state the facts, to explain the experiences of trans people, and to continue advocating and making sure that our support is visible to everyone.
Right, and that's so important to know that it's just not bathrooms, it's restaurants, it's equal access to, you know, to all in all public areas. So that's a very important point to bring up as well. Sylvan Bruni, he is the president of Boston Pride. Sylvan, thanks so much for taking some time and joining us again on the program. Much appreciated.
And thank you for having me. Thank you for bringing visibility to those issues in our community.
And welcome back to Boston Community Affairs on WEEI. In the phone lines right now, we have Shab Krish. She is the director of TMG and Sleep Therapy Center of North Texas. She's also the author of Restore Your Rest, Solutions for TMG and Sleep Disorders. Dr. Shab, thanks so much for taking the time. How are you?
I'm great. Fine. Feeling fine. How are you?
Doing well. So I guess the first question I have for you on this topic, and as I mentioned before we got on the air, I'm interested in this topic because I feel like I don't get enough sleep, as many Americans I'm sure do. So the first question is, do we know how many Americans, either in terms of percentage or rough estimate, are not getting enough sleep each night?
Yeah, I would say somewhere between 4 to 20%.
4 to 20%.
Wide range, but I think it's even higher, because when I talk to my patients or people, and half of them are just not getting enough sleep, so I say at least 20%.
Oh, yeah, I think it's at least 20%, if not higher, as well. How much sleep is enough for adults on a given night? How much would you recommend?
Typically, it's recommended like 7 to 8 hours a night. Some people need a little bit more, and some people need a little bit less, but anything over 10 hours will actually cause you more problems. So around eight hours is pretty typical.
Okay, so 7 to 8 hours, yes. So that's typically the kind of stuff we hear, but it seems so out of reach for so many of us. And I think a lot of the reason is, I know me, you know, I work in media, so I'm always on social media, I'm on my phone, I'm on my email seemingly every waking hour of the day. What are some reasons why it may be difficult to get relaxed and unplugged before bedtime? Is our social media and phone consumption a big reason why?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's only one of the reasons.
Right.
There are so many other reasons, too. Like, most of us don't get enough sleep. So you see all the people lined up in front of the Starbucks drinking too much coffee during the day. So caffeine can disrupt your sleep, and too much light in the bedroom. And, you know, that you talk about social media and all that, because you're on your iPhone or you're on a tablet or iPad or computers. So there's a lot of light. And typically we need to lower the light factor in the bedroom so that we can sleep, because too much light cheats your brain to thinking that it's still daytime, so you don't get sleepy. And another reason that you may have trouble sleeping could be your temperature in the room. It should be about 68 to 72 degrees, so make sure the temperature is not too warm, it's not too cold. And the other thing is eating too late in the day or laying down after eating a meal. It can be a trigger for acid reflux or heartburn, which can make it very difficult to fall asleep or stay asleep. And then, of course, we all talk about stress. Stress is a big trigger for disrupting sleep. When you're stressed, you may find yourself in bed feeling anxious and struggling to get your mind off things that have happened during the day. And, of course, you may also have a sleep disorder of some kind.
Right. And for me, I feel like it's a combination of many things. It's stress.
Yeah.
It's perhaps too much light in my bedroom. So it seems like it's more than one thing. When you say too many lights in the bedroom, what exactly do you mean by that? Do you mean lamps and overhead lights, or are you also counting flickering screens and stuff like that?
Oh, flickering screen is big. Like, a lot of people watch TV in the bedroom. That's
right.
A no-no. Or you could have, your iPad on, you're watching a movie or checking your email, especially checking emails, which may be business related. That could be awake. But the light is a big factor. For us to get sleepy, we need melatonin. And the only time you get melatonin is when it starts to get dark. And people take melatonin if they're not sleeping well, and they expect to sleep longer. But the fact is, melatonin is there only to make you drowsy. After that, it doesn't work anymore. So if you got too much light in your room, any kind of light, any ambient light, matter of fact, can reduce the amount of melatonin you have, which is not sending a signal to your brain to get sleepy.
How about the people who fall asleep with the TV on? What do you say to them?
That's called sleep pressure. Like, you're so tired, eventually you will fall asleep. But then do you stay asleep? You may wake up. And even sounds, actually at nighttime, initially you might be in a deep sleep. As the sleep progresses, as the night progresses, then you may actually become more susceptible to sounds too. So they may fall asleep, but they may not get good sleep.
Right. So that's why, for example, the Red Sox are in the World Series right now. These games are going very late. You hear a lot of people talk about how they fall asleep during the game and then wake up in their living rooms at like 3 in the morning with the TV blaring. I guess that fits into what you're saying, that originally you may fall into a deep sleep, but as the night progresses, you're going to wake up well before you want to.
Totally. That's correct.
Yes, yes. So the next question I have is kind of more of a general point about how we romanticize in this country, Dr. Shab. It seems like we romanticize a lack of sleep, you know, with the whole saying work hard, play hard, especially in the corporate world. People talk about, oh, I get up at 5 in the morning to work out, then I'm working all day, then I'm going out to client meetings, I'm getting home at 10, 11 o'clock, and then I'm doing it again the next day. And it seems like in our culture, especially here in America, that's celebrated as the good way to be, and the best way to get the most out of life, the most productivity out of life. How much do you think of our cultural norms have to do with a lot of people who feel like they just don't have the time to settle down and do what's necessary to prepare themselves for a good night of rest?
Well, it's kind of sad, because that's the way I used to feel too until I
really
started learning about sleep. Yes, I said, oh my gosh, why am I sleepy at all? You know, I really wanted to stick around and do some more, stay up and do some more things. But that's absolutely the wrong thing. The sleep is a necessity, because a lot of things happen during sleep. Like when you're asleep, when you're especially in deep sleep, you produce this these hormones called growth hormones. And as you get older, of course, the growth hormone goes down. However, even then, even when you're 50s, 60s, you still produce some growth hormone, which helps you heal faster. So if you're not getting enough sleep, you're not going to recover easily from like flu or whatever else you may have, any other disease you may have. And then, you know, your memory can be affected too. I've got a patient who's a lawyer, and he can't, he has a sleep problem. He can't sleep, and he can't remember much either. He goes to the courthouse with somebody else in tow because he can't remember what he did the night before, what he planned on seeing the court the next day. So eventually it catches up with you, and that's when I talked about sleep pressure. Eventually you're just going to crash and you're going to fall asleep. But it's better to sleep, and it's a requirement. You must let your body heal. If you want good healing and feel good in the future, you know, you might be young at 35, 40, you want to do that, but at 50 or 60, you may not feel good, and that's because you didn't do enough sleeping.
Right. And you mentioned earlier in our conversation about caffeine. A lot of people feel tired. They're not getting enough rest. So the first thing they do in the morning is get a big cup of coffee and they refill it throughout the day. Talk about that vicious cycle.
Right. So if you're not, so when you have caffeine in your system, it stays in the system for like 6 to 8 hours. And so you have trouble going to sleep or you're going to stay awake. But when you do sleep, you're not going to have a very restful sleep. So in the morning, you don't feel refreshed, and you go back and get more caffeine, and this goes on. Oh, it's a vicious cycle. But you need to relax your brain for you to have good memory, good healing power, all that.
What are some tips that you have for relaxing one's brain?
Well, there are several things that you could do. First of all, you know, drink your coffee by 2 or 3 p.m. so that you can sleep easily, because the coffee stays in your system for 6 to 8 hours.
Okay.
And also, if you want to exercise, you better exercise earlier in the afternoon or, you know, early in the morning, because some people who have a really good do a good workout, they have trouble winding down. And the evenings are for winding down. So stop looking at or working on your smart devices, you know, such as we discussed, iPhones, your tablets, your computers. Instead, wind down and read a book. You know, I know that when I read a book, I fall asleep much faster than when I'm on my iPad. I have to remind myself. I look at the clock and I say, oh my gosh, it's 11 o'clock. I better go to sleep. So it's better to read than to be watching something on Netflix or something. And also, you may want to take a warm bath or shower before bedtime, because studies have shown that increasing our body temperatures before bedtime can actually help us feel sleepier.
Ooh.
And then, yeah, you can start doing something like dimming the lights. So don't have bright lights in your house. Start dimming the lights a couple hours before your bedtime. And then that makes you fall asleep faster. And dim lights, like I said before, can signal your brain to produce the hormone melatonin, which makes you drowsy. And again, the temperature should be between 68 to 70 degrees or so, so you're comfortable, because cold temperature, extreme cold temperature can wake you up, as extreme high temperature too. And then, of course, no ambient light. And you can meditate to relax. You know, nowadays they have so many apps on all the smart devices that we have, which can walk you through meditation process.
Right, absolutely, and that is also important. So, how do you know, doctor, if you have a sleeping disorder? How can you? When is it time to maybe seek professional help versus just trying to self-medicate or come up with some self-remedies?
Right. So you could, when you have, not sleeping well, the common signs that you may find are that you're unrefreshed in the morning, or you wake up with headaches. You could be sleeping during the day and you're just tired, fatigued. Or it's dangerous when you are feeling drowsy when you're driving. We have heard of so many accidents where the train driver just, I think it was in New Jersey, when he drove into the station,
mm-hmm.
or the Exxon Valdez. You know, there's so many accidents can happen. So, you know, you got a sleep disorder. There's several kinds of sleep disorders. Like if you're snoring, somebody tells you you're snoring, somebody can hear you snore in the next room. or you have like obstructive sleep apnea or restless leg syndrome. Mainly it's like you wake up in the morning, you're underfresh, you have headaches. And this ties into other things because actually sleep apnea can raise your risk for other health issues like high blood pressure, diabetes. You can gain weight and you may have heart disease, and stroke is directly related to snoring.
Serious, serious stuff. Dr. Shab Krish, she is the director of TMG and Sleep Therapy Center in North Texas and author, and also the author of Restore Your Rest, Solutions for TMG and Sleep Disorders. Doctor, very enlightening. Thanks so much for taking some time and coming on the show. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
So thank you for listening to another edition of the Boston Community Affairs on WEEI. We will be back next Saturday morning. Talk to you then.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.